Members, this morning we have a review of a report and a presentation about tax expenditures with very esteemed guests today who will talk about their work on the tax expenditure report. We have a couple of, I think, three bills up today that we will finish before we adjourn today. So we're going to try and stay on task. We have many testifiers today, so we'll try and stay on the agenda today. We have a presentation with, as I said, very esteemed members of our community. We have Dr. Wilson, our research director at the Department of Revenue, Dr. Jenny Wall from Carleton College, Dr. John Spry, University of St. Thomas, and senior fellow Jay Kurdowski of the Humphrey School, University of Minnesota. And we do need some enlightenment on tax expenditures, and I'm glad you're here to help us. Members, they have prepared a presentation, and so they have asked us out of courtesy to allow them to make their presentation. They have managed their time. We'll manage our time as well, and we can ask questions when we're done. So with that, Dr. Wilson, would you like to begin?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the tax expenditure review report was mandated by last year's tax omnibus bill. Provision prompted by the bill, a bill authored by Senator Bach and Representative Liebling last year. And a similar bill is now carried by Senator Reinhart and will be heard later this morning. To complete this assignment, I took an opportunity of taking the option of calling a friend. Actually, I called six friends. And they comprise a study team that basically completed this report. The DOR had the privilege of working with six highly respected economists and public policy researchers from across the spectrum. And despite all the jokes that you hear about economists never reaching agreement about anything, the study team reached consensus on this report and is unanimous in its recommendations. And this is despite quite a bit of diversity among the members of the group in terms of their basic way of looking at tax policy. Three members of the study team are here this morning to present the report. And Madam Chair, since you've already introduced them, I will just turn it over to them at this point.
Thank you. I'm Jenny Wall from Carleton College. Everett Dirksen once said about the federal budget, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon it adds up to real money. At a time when Minnesota is facing a budget shortfall of an estimated $6.2 billion, we can't afford not to take a look at where taxpayer money is going. Billions go toward direct spending, and the governor and the legislature, you, regularly review and reauthorize these expenditures as part of the budget cycle. But billions more come in the form of tax expenditures, what I think of as the Robert Frost part of the budget, the revenue not taken. These receive little, if any, scrutiny and rarely, if ever, contain sunset provisions. But spending by any other name is still spending. Spending in the form of tax expenditures can be quite large, and tax expenditures may be doing exactly what the citizens of Minnesota want, but because they undergo no systematic review, they're not exactly transparent, and they often don't even have a stated purpose, we really don't know. Fortunately, you're aware of this, and you requested the review report that was delivered last week. Minnesota isn't the only government interested in regularizing the oversight of tax expenditures. The federal government and several other states, notably Washington, have recently taken a look at this important issue as well. Minnesota is very fortunate, however, already to have a carefully prepared tax expenditure budget, one that is admired throughout the country and something that was very helpful to us in preparing our report. Yet the tax expenditure budget is an informational, not an evaluative document. It defines tax expenditures somewhat differently from what we envision in a rigorous review. It offers no priority list, and it appears in even-numbered years, which is not too useful for you in the budgeting process as a guide. Let me turn this over to John Spry for some definitions and details.
Good morning, Dr. Spry. Could you just introduce yourself for the record?
John Spry from the University of St. Thomas. The most critical requirement for a tax expenditure budget is that it be driven by a clear conception of the intended tax policy. In other words, before measuring tax expenditures as deviation from the normal tax structure must be clearly defined. We need to define normal tax bases for each tax type and criteria for tax expenditures in order to identify what provisions in the tax code are tax expenditures. And as Dr. Marianne, the director of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, has observed, this process of identifying provisions as tax expenditures, as deviations from a normal tax base, is not without controversy. We have, similar to the tax expenditure budget in Minnesota, 7 criteria for tax expenditures. And in order to be a tax expenditure, a provision must meet all of these criteria. It has to apply statewide, even for local taxes. It confers preferential treatment on certain persons, types of income, transactions, or property. It results in reduced state tax revenue. It is not included as an expenditure appropriation item in the state's budget. It is included in the defined tax base for that tax type. It is not subject to an alternative tax, and it can be amended or repealed by an amendment to state law. So sometimes there can be challenging judgment calls when a provision is clearly satisfying 6 of these 7 criteria to define it as a tax expenditure, yet there may be disagreement about whether it satisfies the 7th criteria. In addition, controversy about the proper definition of the reference tax base can affect the list of tax expenditures. So before we move to discuss what provisions are tax expenditures, it's valuable to review the normal tax bases. And for the income tax, economists use a definition that is used in the tax expenditure budget, that the normal tax base is income from all sources, less those expenses that are reasonable and necessary to generate that income. So if an expense is reasonable and necessary to generate income, a tax deduction for that expense is not considered to be a tax expenditure, because it's a tax on income, not top-line gross revenue. With respect to the personal, especially the corporate franchise tax, in defining those expenses, we would like to use economic depreciation for capital goods, and the standard way this is treated is by using straight-line depreciation over a specified asset life as a proxy for economic depreciation. This means that accelerated depreciation, where you get to depreciate an asset faster than straight-line depreciation, would be considered a tax expenditure as a deviation from this base. And also for multi-state or more multinational corporations, the tax expenditure budget uses, and we concur with the UDIPA Uniform Division of Income Tax Purposes definitions. And then finally, on sales and use tax, this is where our review is a little bit different than the tax expenditure definition of the reference tax base. Economists and public policy analysts generally consider the sales and use tax to be a consumption tax, and that the reference tax base would be consumer purchases of goods and services, not the purchases of intermediate goods such as capital goods. So in looking at that definition of the reference tax base for each tax and the criteria for tax expenditures, we generally agree with the list of tax expenditures in the tax expenditure budget as being a good starting point for the review process. But there's a few things we'd like to bring to your attention that could be deviations. The first is the omission of items with zero cost. Under those 7 criteria, if there are preferential tax provisions, such as in 2005, there were provisions passed to provide some benefits to a regional distribution center for international freight at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, that isn't going to show up currently in the tax expenditure budget because it's not costing us revenue until a taxpayer takes advantage of that provision. So we think things like that should be noted and could be part of the regular review process. On income tax, there's two things that could be considered tax expenditures, although they'd be very hard to change for administrative reasons, and that's the imputed value of the ownership of homes as meeting that definition of income, and also the deferral of capital gains. Currently, capital gains are taxed when they are taken, not when they accrue. Quite frankly, it'd be very difficult to change that provision or even to estimate what the size of that provision would be in the tax expenditure budget. But it is a provision that meets all the definitions and criteria in the tax expenditure budget. On the corporate franchise tax, the dividend received deduction is a very complex issue. At the federal level, dividend received deduction is not included by the Joint Tax Committee and the Treasury Department in their list of tax expenditures, because this is intended to prevent sort of triple taxation, where one corporation pays a dividend to another corporation. Without that dividend received deduction at the federal level, you'd be taxing twice at the corporate level and then again at the dividend or capital gains level. However, at the state level, with respect to dividends received, we're not really sure if all of the times those dividends are paid out of a corporation that's already been subject to Minnesota's corporate income tax. So that's something that should have further attention in the future. On sales and use tax, we consider the sales and use tax to be a consumption tax. So business purchases of intermediate goods like capital equipment would not be considered part of the reference tax base. However, as long as the tax expenditure budget is based on this idea of a final purchase of a good, then we have some provisions like the Job Z provisions that create a different treatment, a preferential treatment for purchases of some business inputs under certain circumstances, such as in certain parts of the state but not other parts. So those could continue to be reviewed. And also we have a few things we just sort of want to bring to your attention that aren't in the tax expenditure budget but meet the criteria for a tax expenditure. Insurance premiums and medical services are subject to a gross receipt tax that's very similar but not identical to a sales tax, but at a lower rate. And also motor vehicle sales tax has a little bit lower rate than the general sales tax.
Dr. Sprite, just so members are aware, and we call that the provider tax, and I just wanted to make sure we all knew we were talking the same language here in Minnesota. That's what we call it, provider tax.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer?
I just have a quick question on this page, sales and use tax, the first line, business purchases of intermediate input. Could you tell me what an intermediate input may be?
It could be a piece of capital equipment or a computer. One way that one of the members of the study team, Professor Kalambakidis from the University of Minnesota, explained it is when you buy flour for a bakery, right, that flour is an intermediate good because it leaves the bakery in the bread. When you buy capital equipment like a blender or a computer to manage inventory, in some sense, because that capital equipment depreciates, it's not physically in the bread, but it's economically in the bread, because you wouldn't have the bread without that inventory control system or the machinery to make the bread. So also on the property tax, we are recommending that in the future tax expenditure budgets that the state property tax and local property taxes should be combined, and that the fiscal disparities and veterans exclusion should be included as tax expenditures and subject to possible review as meeting the criteria for tax expenditures. And so I'll turn it over to Professor Wall.
Thanks. Jenny Wall, Carleton College. Before we get to specific suggestions and about both substance and procedure, we thought a useful way to frame the proposed review process would be to go back to basics. Tax policy has three guiding principles: efficiency, equal treatment of equals, and simplicity. First, efficiency. Allocating economic resources toward their most productive use is probably the chief advantage of free markets. One goal of a successful tax system is to interfere with this process as little as possible. A mark of effective tax policy, then, is preserving incentives for businesses and individuals to make decisions on the basis of productivity rather than pure tax benefit. Equal treatment of equals is also great tax policy. Violation of this standard gives taxpayers incentives to seek low-tax sources of income or to buy untaxed products and services purely for tax rather than economic reasons. And simplicity is the third principle that dictates good tax policy. More simplicity leads to greater compliance, cheaper administration and enforcement. That's good for transparency and for preservation of public resources. A tax system that was based solely on these three principles would have far fewer tax expenditures than we currently have. All of these three favor broad tax bases and low rates. Justified tax expenditures would include only tax provisions that offset market failure, negative externality, or that decrease the cost of tax administration by enough to offset lost efficiency or equity. So most tax expenditures currently in our code, by their very nature, tend to violate one of these or more of these, one or more of these three principles. But of course, lawmakers might reasonably use tax expenditures to achieve an expanded set of policy objectives. We have a few listed up there, but you know, things like fairness or reduction of tax burden on targeted groups and so forth. Evaluating a given tax expenditure in light of these principles and objectives therefore requires it to have a clearly stated purpose. If it doesn't, measuring its effectiveness in achieving that purpose is impossible. Unfortunately, most tax expenditures fail to have a stated purpose. So that's a good place to start. Now, of course, a purpose like to reduce taxes paid by industry X is not especially useful for evaluation. Identifying why we desire reduced taxes for X rather than why is what really matters. Once a purpose is stated clearly, evaluating success in achieving that purpose requires measuring direct impact with regard to the purpose. And the information you might need will vary according to the tax provision and the stated purpose, but it could include things like the number and the nature of those who pay less tax as a result, the change in people's behavior due to the provision, and any unintended results. There might be indirect impacts as well, although these would be much harder and more costly to measure. Naturally, success in attaining a goal also requires comparing it to the cost of doing so. Therefore, evaluating a tax expenditure also requires an estimate of foregone revenue or, where useful, foregone reduction in tax rates. Recall that any time we have a tax expenditure, we're by definition choosing not to have a lower tax rate. Assessment of a particular provision also requires considering alternatives to achieving the same goal. Perhaps you could use a direct expenditure or a modified tax expenditure to do the same job at a lower cost, for example. One last important point before I turn this back to John Spry. A review of the quality proposed in our report will require additional staff with both knowledge of tax policy and program evaluation. To get good results, you'll have to fund them adequately.
In order to provide some guidance on priorities for evaluation, we worked as a group and created a list of criteria for what provisions in the tax code that are tax expenditures should be especially high priorities. So this process required us to measure how well each tax expenditure satisfied criteria. And those criteria are the definition for a tax expenditure. And we particularly thought if provision satisfied these priority criteria, it should be a higher on the list for evaluation. So the first is that it's an exception to the tax expenditure reference base. Secondly, that it could be easily replaced with a direct expenditure maintaining its benefit distribution. Third, it has a large annual revenue impact or a high annual rate of growth. It has been subject to recent legislative proposals for modification or repeal. It's difficult to administer or could be repealed or modified without creating new administrative problems. And so for some tax expenditures, that's actually very important. It'd be very hard for an administrative and a compliance standard to change some tax expenditures. And so looking at that, we worked individually and as a group and found that there was a lot of agreement on what are high priority items for each tax type for evaluation. And I want to emphasize that these are not hit lists. We do not suggest that the listed provisions are prime candidates for repeal. Instead, the list simply identifies these tax expenditures as ones that should be identified earliest for each tax type. And although an evaluation could consider the option of repeal, it should also focus on ways to modify a tax expenditure to enhance its effectiveness. For example, should the working family credit retain its unique two-tiered structure, or should it be made simpler by making a flat percentage of the federal credit, which is a practice in other states? For the research and development credit, can that be simplified? There are issues of should this be done better through a direct expenditure or a tax deduction or a tax credit? And so there are several dimensions. For the individual income tax, you can see our top 12 priorities. A number of these are large. A number of these, again, not just the working family credit, but some of the other ones could be replaced with a credit or a direct expenditure. And I know there's been legislation, for example, on the mortgage interest deduction in the House to change that to a credit. And so the evaluation is much more than a binary yes, no about keeping the provision, but it's also being thoughtful and doing a study of what's the best way to design the provision to meet its intended goal. On the corporate tax, there are relatively a smaller number of corporate tax expenditures, so this list goes a little bit deeper. And one of the things we're recommending is for certain provisions like Job Z, which crosses tax type, that that has corporate, individual income, sales tax, a variety of provisions, that all of those provisions be considered together in evaluating in some ways Job Z as a program versus separate evaluations of those six items. On the sales tax, we have, again, a list of six criteria. And as you see, the partial on legal services or repair services, that is reflecting the issue of business inputs. And on the property tax, two things that we found that meet the definition of tax expenditures, fiscal disparities and the disabled veterans exclusion should be considered for review. Again, this doesn't mean we want to repeal these. These mean that they're tax expenditures that you want to be deliberative and consider, is this the best way to meet this goal, and how does it meet principles of good tax policy? And with that, I will turn it over to Jay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jay Kudrowski. I'm a senior fellow at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs. My role this morning is to take you through process improvement recommendations. Tax expenditures are obviously becoming more interesting to everybody, part of our role is in doing this assessment of tax expenditures was try to devise a better process for reviewing tax expenditures. I start with this quote because it really highlights the fact that tax expenditures are not given the kind of scrutiny that the appropriations do, and yet they are equally costly to the state of Minnesota as they are in other states as well. So the first recommendation we have is that Minnesota create a tax expenditure commission of policy and tax specialists oversee the evaluation process and recommend changes based on those evaluations to the governor and to the legislature. I emphasize, too, the word governor in that first recommendation. One of our key recommendations is that the governor be brought into the tax expenditure process. Right now, it's more the legislature is the one doing the analyzing of tax expenditures. We think the governor ought to be brought into that, as is the whole executive budget process. The second recommendation is that the commission depend on expert staff at the Department of Revenue and other state agencies for the primary evaluation work. If the commission is created, we didn't think the commission should have its own staff, but rather ought to depend on the state staff, and we were comfortable that the revenue department is objective enough to provide the work for this tax expenditure commission. Third recommendation is that the legislature appropriate sufficient funds to pay for the 12 annual tax expenditure evaluations that we propose. Those cost about $100,000 apiece if they're to be done correctly, so it'd be $1.2 million per year that would need to be invested in doing the tax expenditure reviews. Here is the recommendation that we have for the evaluation cycle. The first year, we would suggest that the commission undertake 6 from the income tax list and 6 from the corporate tax list. The second year, 6 from the sales tax and 6 from the income tax, et cetera. And in an 8-year period, would cycle through all of the major tax expenditures for the review and recommendation to the legislature and to the governor. Go back. The fourth recommendation is the Tax Expenditure Commission define a clear and measurable purpose for each tax expenditure if one is not stated in the law. The legislature seems to have difficulty creating clear purposes for the tax expenditures. It's difficult to make an evaluation of a tax expenditure if there isn't a clear legislative purpose. So we're recommending that in lieu of the legislature not specifying a purpose, that the Tax Expenditure Commission would specify the purpose, of course, always subject to the legislature establishing what it considers to be the correct purpose if the Tax Expenditure Commission did it incorrectly. The next recommendation is that the tax expenditures be fully integrated into the biennial budget process, requiring the governor and the legislature to make explicit decisions about whether to extend, repeal, or modify or replace given tax expenditures. In other words, when the governor made his recommendation this year, this month, he would have made recommendations, in a sense, on all of the tax expenditures, either indicating that he wanted to continue them as they are or that he wanted to repeal or modify them in some way. And we actually did some work on what a budget page would look like and what a summary page would look like, showing the gross taxes, i.e. the tax base, and then subtracting out each of the tax expenditures so you had a sense of what each of the tax expenditures were costing, and understanding that the governor in recommending that and ultimately the legislature in recommending that were deciding to exempt those from the tax base. The next one is that the revenue neutral sunset for each tax expenditure should be developed following its evaluation. It would expire and the rate for the tax would be adjusted downward to hold revenue constant. In other words, we're recommending that you enact by law sunset provisions that when the sunset date is arrived at, that the tax expenditure would be would conclude and the tax rate would be adjusted accordingly, creating more tax base at that point. The next recommendation is that the tax expenditures be classified by core function to the extent possible so that they could be compared to direct expenditures that serve the same function. A good example of that would be the interest deduction for home mortgages. That clearly is an incentive for home ownership. It should be considered along with other programs for housing that the state might enact on the appropriation side, and then compare the costs and decide if, in fact, the mortgage interest deduction is something that the state still wants to do. The next budget process recommendation is that the Appropriations Committee examine tax expenditures alongside any direct expenditures. Again, trying to get the fact that these are dollars being spent every year from the general tax base And that the tax committee would yet need to review what the appropriations committee did to provide some uniformity to the entire process. The next recommendations of the state budget summaries include total tax expenditures for each tax to show their fiscal impacts on the gross tax revenue. And the tax expenditures be included as a separate category in the legislature's joint budget resolution. In mid-March, you're to present the House and Senate to present a concurrent budget resolution indicating the total level of revenues and expenditures for the next biennium. We're recommending that as part of that joint resolution that the tax expenditures that you're intending to continue be shown as well. We recommend that the Department of Revenue and Minnesota Management and Budget move as quickly as possible to meet the statutory requirements to post both direct and tax expenditures by the state online in a searchable database. We think it's important that the public have access to this information and would add to the review process. And finally, we recommend that the legislature require the Department of Revenue disclose the beneficiaries of business tax credits online. This could be controversial, but Oklahoma has embarked on this, and it's proving to be something that people do like seeing and understanding who's getting the benefit of what tax credit. So with that, Madam Chairman, we would be happy to respond to any questions or receive any comments that you have about our report.
Thank you all very much for your work on this. I do have a couple of quick questions. Dr. Spry, we have some refundable tax credits. Can you comment on that, whether there is a priority or is there some recommendation regarding the impact of a refundable tax credit versus just a tax credit?
Madam Chair, in looking at our priorities for evaluation, one of our criteria was that it could be easily replaced with a direct expenditure. And what we were in some ways meaning by that is some things, again, the working family credit, which is refundable, you can imagine trying to achieve the same targeted benefit to a low-income population that's working harder through a direct line item appropriation. And so that's one of the reason I think also I'm trying to remember what else is refundable, but I think a number of the things that made our list of top 12 for the personal income tax were very, very similar to a appropriation. They're just being administered by the Department of Revenue instead of an agency.
Thank you. And then about the, I think, Mr. Kudrowski or Professor, you mentioned a sample budget page. I didn't see that in the report. Is that an appendix, or do you have that we might be able to look at how that would look?
Madam Chair, we do. I don't have it with me today. I'm not sure. Paul has it, and we'd be happy to get it to the committee. Essentially what it is, it's the summary budget page that shows the income tax receipts expected for the coming biennium, the sales tax receipts, and the corporate tax receipts. Okay, and those are generally one number. What we're suggesting is that number be the gross number, and then we show all of the exclusion tax expenditures, all the credit tax expenditures, et cetera, so that at the end, then, you can see what the net number is after all of the tax expenditures. And we do that for each of the taxes, and we have developed that. John and I did some work on that and be happy to provide that to the committee.
I think that would be a revolutionary change around here to see that. I'd really be interested to see what that budget page looks like. I'm guessing members at this table would too, and so if you would make that available to us, we would very much appreciate it.
Great.
Member Senator Pogemiller.
Are the top 12 lists prioritized, or are they just the top 12?
Dr. Spry. Dr. Wall.
No.
We worked actually first as a group, and then we split off into looking at this individually and what our priorities would be. And I believe in the end we sort of informally ranked them as a group, and there were some slight individual differences. It was really remarkable, despite different backgrounds and maybe ways of looking at things, there was a high degree of agreement on what was in the top 12, and I believe we did rank them. And you can correct me if my memory's wrong.
Well, so, Madam Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, one of the problems we had with writing this report is that we weren't the Tax Expenditure Commission. And so we really didn't want to speak to priorities, and we didn't want to speak to specific recommendations because we weren't the Tax Expenditure Commission. So we wanted to give you enough meat on the bones, if you will, such that you would be moved to pass the legislation necessary to create the commission. So I wouldn't suggest that this is a precise prioritization at all. We do believe those are the top 12, and we reached a consensus on that. There's some sense of priority, but again, we would want the Tax Expenditure Commission to decide the priority for the reviews.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogemiller.
So I got both answers.
Yes.
That's right.
Which is it?
Well,
is a higher priority to look at the working family credit or the marriage penalty credit?
Well, because we're not the commission, these are only suggestions.
Yeah, but that's not.
Madam Chair, Senator Pogemiller, We actually ranked them.
Okay.
Okay. And then we put them down in the order of the rankings, but we don't recommend them to you in this report as being prioritized.
So you gave both, Madam Chair, you gave both answers in the same answer.
Yes.
Okay.
If I understand, I think what you're saying is informally you think these might be ones you might want to start with, but you're not making a formal recommendation with them.
Correct.
Thank you.
But
we
Madam
appreciate
Chair,
your work. Senator Pogemiller.
My question, I understood that these were the 12 to start with. What I wanted to know is, was working family credit a little higher priority than marriage penalty credit? That's what I was trying to get at.
Madam Chair,
Professor
Senator
Podrowski.
Pogemiller, we were troubled when that ended up being the number one. And we didn't have enough time to really sort out whether we thought that was number one. On the other hand, because it was number one on the list, we left it as number one.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Pogemiller.
Yeah, I don't think you should worry about that because you're real clear in the paragraph, in the information here that this is not a hit list. This is something that repeals one option, but it focus on the effectiveness is the other way to look at this. So, no, I don't think you should be overly, for someone who reads the report, I don't think you should be overly concerned they'll view it negatively like that.
I think that's a really important point, that this isn't, we should necessarily do something about these rather that you should take a clear and deliberative look at them.
Well, I heard you to say that we should be looking, are we using the best method for being effective, and are we accomplishing our purpose, and how many people are being affected by it, and is it effective? And that's a much bigger question than just, is this a hit list? We should be looking at all these different criteria to see how successful we are in making this work. And, you know, the reason whether it's on the top, it certainly would make my list anyway because it's so complicated. And that complexity is one of the things that you're concerned about. You say that's one of the reasons you would want to evaluate one of these programs. For me, the refundable nature of it makes it automatically complicated and expensive to administer. And there are extra costs to having a program where it's a refundable program as opposed to just a tax credit. Other members with questions or comments about the Tax Expenditure Commission? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to any one of you. I'm just curious. There was probably a point in time where you were deliberating where you thought that a taxed expenditure commission would be a better way to approach this than just making recommendations on methodology to the legislature. And so you came to the conclusion that we needed a tax expenditure commission. Why don't you think the legislature could do this if the method was prescribed?
Madam Chair, Senator
Professor
Senjum, having served on the Budget Trends Study Commission and having other members, actually Laura did as well, so there were two of us that had served on the Budget Trends Study Commission that was appointed 5 by the governor, 5 by the House, and 5 by the Senate. We felt that that was a very good approach to dealing with very controversial and difficult issues. And the difficulty with simply recommending that the legislature do this is that we felt it was critical that the governor be included in this process. And we felt that it needed to be included in the budget process such that the governor's recommending to the legislature which tax expenditures he or she wants to have in any given biennial period. So we felt that a commission was really the better approach to doing it. And frankly, the track record of the legislature doing good, thorough analyses of these tax expenditures isn't as great as we would hope in the future through a tax expenditure commission.
Ouch, Professor. Senator Limmer and then Senator Scoy.
If I could direct your attention to slide two. Oh, I'm sorry. I think it's something else. Seven. The second bullet point makes reference to tax expenditure would confer preferential treatment on certain persons, types of income, or transactions, or property. Would you also agree that certain tax rates, or even no tax rates on certain persons, also confer special treatment as well?
Dr. Spry?
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, I think that's one of the things we were trying to say in the report and pointing out in my earlier testimony that certain sales, like motor vehicle sales, is at a lower rate than other sales. That's preferential to that type of transaction. And so in general, I think throughout the existing tax expenditure budget, they try to identify those provisions where somebody receives a preference or a certain kinds of transaction receives a preference. And I think there's a footnote, if you're getting at the rate structure, that some economists, and again, defining tax expenditures can be a little controversial. Some economists have argued that the graduated rate structure is preferential because it provides lower tax rates to people whose income is very consistent, and it has higher tax rates for and higher tax payments over a lifetime for people whose income varies widely from year to year, like a salesperson or a farmer.
Madam Chair, if you took it to an extreme level, then perhaps just a straight line tax would be the most equal tax application. Certainly equal. Now, there may be social consequences to that, but the question is whether or not the state wants to get in the business of actually giving preferential treatment to some taxpayers as opposed to others. And I think this state has probably done that not only on the expenditure side, but also on the tax revenue side as well. The reason I bring that up is that for many, throughout federal as well as state history, we sometimes create tax expenditures or deductions or credits in order to incentivize certain businesses that may do well in the state of Minnesota, or let's say we had a drop in corporate startups or a certain quality of corporate presence that might provide good quality, high-paying jobs as opposed to minimal salaried jobs. That's kind of, from our point of view, we have, for good and bad, have gone down that road many times in order to attract business. We don't seem to want to ever change systematically or systemically the whole tax system in the state. We play this game of incentivizing and, in some respects, maybe even punishing certain taxpayers because, for lack of a better term, they just get more out of life than anyone else. And I'm just wondering, in your review of this, is there a place to incentivize certain classifications of business that bring in higher salaries, better quality of life for our taxpayers.
Well, Dr. Wall.
Yes. On the frame for evaluation, we listed a number of objectives that you as legislators might have as representative officials. And I think what we saw our purpose being was to be sure that whatever tax incentives were in there, that it was clear as to what the objective was and the underlying objective, not just to pay lower taxes or whatever. And that way you could then evaluate whether the tax expenditure was actually meeting that objective. If you have that information, if it's transparent to you and to the citizens of Minnesota, that was the suggestion for the searchable database and so forth, and everybody says that's fine, we've come to consensus on that, then that's fine. But I think the big issue that we noticed in writing up this report is that we don't have that information. You don't have that information, whether it's what the objective is or whether it's meeting the objective. And so we don't go so far as to say we know that this is bad or this is good in doing this. In part, we're saying we just don't know, and we're not sure that you know, and we think it would be good if you did.
Members, we have the full report in our packets. Dr. Skoy.
That would be a promotion.
There's so many doctors in the room. We're having a hard time keeping up here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Spry, I want to go back to your baker's analogy and see if I can get an understanding of the sales tax on the capital is not, if there's an exemption for it, is not an expenditure, but the sales tax exemption on flour, because it's a food item, is an expenditure. Could you walk me through that again so I understand that differential?
Dr. Spray.
Madam Chair, Senator, the tax expenditure budget in its current form, as I understand it, does not say that the fact that the purchase of flour by a bakery for resale as a pie or bread is a tax expenditure, because that purchase is not the final purchase. So that the tax expenditure budget, if it errs, it probably errs on the side of including more things. So the tax expenditure budget definition of the reference tax base for the sales and use tax is the final purchase of goods or services. So under that definition, the last person to buy the blender or the computer for the inventory control would be that bakery. And so if that's the definition of the reference tax base, which the tax expenditure budget uses, then the process where there's a refund for the capital equipment would be a tax expenditure. If the reference tax base was final consumer purchases of goods and services, then neither the purchase of goods that are consumables, like flour making bread, or the capital equipment to make the bread would be considered a deviation from that consumer purchase of final sales as the reference or normal tax base.
And Senator Skoy.
Thank you. And then is there a difference between the capital purchase at the final sale point, the grocery store, as opposed to the baker?
Dr. Spry.
Madam Chair, Senator Spry, the bread would be the final thing you'd buy from a baker, but if a consumer was buying a capital item like a laptop or a home stereo system or an appliance, that purchase is the final consumer purchase of goods and services under the reference tax base most economists use would be part of the normal sales tax base. So a tax provision that excluded the sale of televisions to consumers, hypothetically, would be a tax expenditure.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Wall, on your slide 12, you talked about the budget impact, and we're going to get a budget sheet from Professor Krodowski, which we will be grateful for. But there's a point on there about foregone revenue, foregone reduction in tax rates. I think that's part of the conversation that seems to have been missing here at the Capitol, that when we choose or implement these tax expenditures, we're choosing to have higher tax rates.
Mm-hmm.
And we're forcing those rates up by collecting less revenue and making those policy decisions.
Exactly.
Can you expand on that just a little bit? Other states are struggling with this same issue, are they not?
Oh, definitely they are. I think the use of tax expenditures gives an illusion of something, that we have small government and so forth. But what we have to recognize is that having tax expenditures also at the same time is a choice that we've made not to do something else. And as you suggest, madam, what we've chosen not to do, if we embed things in the tax code, for example, that exclude things from the base, then by definition, if we wanted to raise the same amount of revenue, we're going to have higher rates. There's just no two ways about it. So I think you're absolutely right in saying that it's a deliberate, if not acknowledged, is a deliberate choice. If you include many, many things that cause the tax base to not have things in them or to have preferential treatment, then by definition you are choosing not to have a lower tax rate on a broader base.
And Dr. Wall, one of the things we didn't talk a lot about today was the property tax, but when we have tax-exempt status or nonprofits, that impacts our local property tax base too, and we've seen that some of our cities or jurisdictions have a significant amount of market value off the books because of the decisions we've made here at the Capitol for tax-exempt status.
Madam, I was one of the persons who was looking at the property tax, and that concerned me a great deal as well. But as I understand it, there's already a property tax commission that is looking at that issue. And so we didn't spend quite as much time on property tax, despite the fact that I really wanted to, because we felt that you already had a process in place and thought that you would want to look at the results of that in addition to this. And so we focused mostly on sales, income, and corporate. But I think property tax is definitely something to be aware of.
Thank you, Doctor. We're going to continue to have conversations. There is a working group. They're going to come back next year, I think. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that issue is off the table for this committee this year. I think it's squarely in the middle of our conversation already. So I hope you'll be willing to come back and
I'm glad to hear that too.
And provide your expertise some more. Senator Limmer.
Thank you. I'd like to bring us to a perspective of perhaps a business owner in the state of Minnesota and how they analyze this. If let's say the state had some estimation that somebody might estimate that we have a high rate of taxation for a business, but we also have a large number of exemptions, and if the business makes himself or avails themselves of the exemption, his tax payment will be a little lower versus lowering the tax rate but removing a number of exemptions. If the bottom line is the same, what's the purpose of having this exercise in the first place unless the legislature wants to just plain lower the cost of taxes on, let's say, a business? Let's say we chose that as a decision to do. If that's the case, just making the shell game bigger on one end and not on the other, what advantage are we giving a business owner to want to locate in the state of Minnesota? I think everybody wants to talk about jobs in the state of Minnesota. We seem to be focused on the public route of providing jobs, but from a free market position, what's the difference if we lower a tax rate but we increase or we get rid of the exemptions? It's still the bottom line is the bottom line for a business.
Well, I'd say a couple of things. One is economists talk about rent-seeking behavior or seeking things on the basis of tax rather than economic reasons. I could certainly envision that if you don't have something that's transparent and obvious, such as we actually do have low rates, but instead we have certain categories that have special treatment, then people will seek out that special treatment. I also would suggest that unless you have something that's a very exclusive rifle shot in legislation, that there are going to be some unintended consequences for writing in a tax expenditure rather than having lower tax rates, because all kinds of people might take advantage of it that you might not have anticipated. And as Jay pointed out to me on slide 3, one thing just to be aware of is that tax expenditures are extremely large. On the sales tax side, for example, tax expenditures are greater than the amount of revenue collected. And so we are talking about a lot of stuff out there that arguably it's the same in a perfect world of information with no incentives. You'd have the same result with lower rates and more exemptions, but it's a lot easier to keep track when you have lower rates.
Thank you. Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, you know, I agree with much of what you have in your report here. I know everybody has a feeling about taxes and the way we're taxed and that it needs to be simpler. And we need to collapse our classifications. And I do like the fact that we should measure the outcomes and have a purpose of why we're doing a certain tax. I guess my question to you is that, you know, you talked about looking at some of these things over an 8-year period of time. And I know to get in and examine each one, it's going to take time. But I think we need a complete reform of the way we do our taxes. And I'm just wondering, you know, this piecemeal approach to it, rather than a carte blanche, we're going to shift the way we're going to fund government operations. I just wanted you to speak to that because I'm thinking 8 years, you know, that's a long-term goal, but I'm not sure if we, you know, to be competitive with the other states and what we need, if we truly want reform and want to be innovative, that's a long ways down.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, it's really a question of dollars and effort. If you were to create a tax expenditure commission, would the Revenue Department have the resources necessary to be able to do it in a 1 or 2 year period? Could you appropriate $10 million and could they staff up sufficiently to be able to do that? That's really the question. We thought that it would be I'm not sure we actually looked at the question about doing it in a short period of time. We presumed that it would be better to do it over a long period of time, but you raise a very interesting point.
Thank you. Dr. Spry.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, to your question, a good thing to remember is after the last major federal tax reform, the Reagan and then congressional Democrats like Senator Bill Bradley had a massive base broadening, rate lowering tax reform in 1986. Since that happened, tax expenditures have grown like weeds throughout the federal tax code, so that even if you decided this is such a good idea, we should do it for the first time all at once over a year or two, I think the process of having tax expenditures be a permanent part of the budget process and having this regular review of tax expenditures on an ongoing basis could help prevent the growth and sort of the deform of the tax reform that you envision.
Thank you. Dr.
Just to follow.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I agree with that. I think that especially if you do a large reform and change the way that you need to, you're certainly going to get expenditures to come back. People are going to want exemptions for to increase this business or that, but they always should have a sunset provision. And if it's budgetary for that business to budget it, it could be 5 years in the future, but reviewed at 2 years out, so you know whether or not you're going to extend that to the future for the businesses to accommodate a change in the taxation. But I do agree that expenditures, you know, we look at the exemptions and the tax expenditures that we have, it just continues to grow and it never gets reviewed back again. And then there's the lack of the political will or intestinal fortitude to say, well, I don't know if this makes sense anymore. And so to have that in there as a permanent provision that when you do an exemption or a tax expenditure that it must expire at a 5-year period or a 2-year period or whatever that number that makes sense would be.
Thank you all very much for being here. Members, we have 3 bills that we need to take up yet today. And I'm sure that the doctors and the professor will be available to for questions for any of the members if we have them. Thank you so much for your work. Senator Reiner, you've had the best introduction possible to your bill. 3 doctors and a professor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That seems like a full house. But I'm not much of a poker player, so. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment that I would like to put onto the bill before we kind of launch a discussion of it.
We have Senate File 220 before us, members.
It would be the A1 amendment that I hope you have copies of.
Very quickly. Senator Reinert, could you just briefly describe what your bill does and what the amendment would do to your bill?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a bill that actually ties directly to, we'll come back to the presentation you just had, directly to the list of recommendations. One of the recommendations of the study group was that we have a commission that looks at tax expenditures. So I think it's slide 19 talks about creating a tax expenditure commission of policy and tax specialists to oversee the evaluation process. The commission would depend on expert staff. The legislature would appropriate the funds to do the work. This is one structure, and I've had a lot of input already from both members as well as folks outside our membership that are interested in this, open to all kinds of conversation about how this gets done. But the intent of this bill is to actually fulfill that recommendation of the commission. And the A1 amendment does, members, is focuses specifically on the point in slide 21 of the presentation you just received that talked about making the sunset of these expenditures revenue neutral, so that it's very clear that the intent of looking at expenditures is about the policy. Why do we do these? Why do we want to do these? Are they achieving the goals that we want? And it's not about removing expenditures and then sort of having a backdoor revenue grab for the state of Minnesota. So the A1 amendment, Madam Chair, is very clear that if an expenditure goes away, the tax rate in that category goes down, so that it's a no net gain in that area.
Senator Reinert, with your amendment, wouldn't that make our rates go up and down quite a bit? I mean, wouldn't that have the effect? I mean, I'm all for rate reductions, and I'm all for the elimination of expenditures, but that could have the effect of changing our rates every year or two, or every time we adopt a budget or review an expenditure. That might be more than what you're asking for here. I would just ask you to consider that. I will move the A1 amendment, and we can take action on that now if you'd like. The chair moves the adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. No. The ayes have it, and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Reinert and members, this bill will have to go to Senator Perry's committee. So I think it makes sense for us to consider sending this to Senator Perry's committee, give it some more thought, look at it, consider the commission report, and give Senator Reinert some advice or share our thoughts on this bill. In the interest of time, that might be a good plan for today. Senator Howe?
Madam Chair, I was just going to make the same point that if you adjust this with that amendment, then there might be a concern of, well, then why get rid of the exemption other than it wouldn't help the revenue side of it if you're looking at the overall budget picture. So there might be a sense of saying, well, let's just continue with that exemption because all we're going to do is lower the tax. It's going to be revenue neutral, and it's not going to help our budget situation out or what we can finance. And I think when you're looking at those expenditures, you're looking at what you can afford. And this kind of neutralizes that, saying, well, it's not going to have effect on what we can afford to do. So maybe it speaks to whether it makes sense to do that expenditure, but I think it really comes down to many times of what we can afford to do.
Senator Bach. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Reinert, to that point?
To that point. Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, my intent of having the amendment is to make it clear that the intent of this commission is to review the policy.
Okay.
And not – it's our job, I think, as members to talk about the revenue. Do we want that amount of revenue? Do we want to expend it on these certain things? But, you know, what we do with these expenditures, as we just heard, is we adopt them and we put them on autopilot and we don't come back and review them. And they're significant. You know, we heard in the sales tax category, expenditures are more than the revenue we actually bring in. So that's my intent. I think the chair is correct. If we as a legislative body were inconsistent on our expenditure policy, rates could fluctuate wildly from year to year. But I think we need to be honest with ourselves that our goal is to actually talk about these. What do they do? Are they effective? How much do they cost? And then make a decision on the revenue sides.
Thank you. Senator Rust.
I think Senator Bach was next.
Thank you. I would certainly support your suggestion there. Anything that sets up an advisory commission or a task force by Senate rule needs to be examined in the, in this case, in the state government committee. And I have shared with Senator Reinert, quite frankly, a number of flaws in the way in which the commission is set up. It doesn't have a fiscal agent. It doesn't have a way of calling itself into being. It doesn't have a method of selecting the chair or vice chair. It's problematic when you have legislators on a commission that they are, can be part of a group that accepts outside money. I've made, you know, some just raise those issues with Senator Reinert. And I think the idea, based on the report, is a good one. I would just also caution, however, that my own feeling is legislators should not be a part of that commission. It should be tax experts and professionals and academics, and should be as far away from politicians as possible.
Another ringing endorsement of our work in this committee.
Well, no, because then the commission is accountable to the legislature, and we would be the evaluators of their work rather than the producers of the work. It's just a conviction I have with regard to groups like this. And I know the property tax one, Senator Skoy, is a working group that includes legislators, but I think this is a far more academic exercise, and I mean that in the best possible way, and that the accountability issue is when the report is delivered to both the legislature and the governor rather than in the producing of it that would include half of the members being elected.
Senator Reinert, it sounds like you could accomplish a great deal by inviting Senator Rest to be an author on your bill, and I think that would be a smart move.
Might not like my suggestion, though.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Reinert, just something to consider to avoid the kind of the rate adjustments that the amendment provides. You know, if we're ever going to get the state's fiscal house in order so that we have some stability, we have to start to build budget reserves. And it just seems to me if we have some tax expenditures that are going to be expiring, the sensible place to put the monies may be into the state budget reserve. You know, the economists that we've had sitting in this room have said we should be carrying a budget reserve of anywhere to 3 to 5%. 3% is $1 billion. 5% is approaching $2 billion. I'm not sure this legislature has got the will to ever build that budget reserve. I think we need to create some mechanism for that to happen so that the reserve gets built on its own. And so that's just my thought as to what you might want to do with the expiring money.
Senator Reinert, another potential author on your bill. In the interests of time, we do have two other bills here. The chair would move that we send Senate File 220 as amended to the State Government Innovation Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The Senate File 220 is adopted and sent to state government. Thank you, Senator Reinert. We also have Senator Reinert's Senate File 122. We also have Senate File 109 for Senator Nienau. So, Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm inviting to the table former Commissioner of Revenue Ward Innes.
Senator Reinert, because of the time, would you allow Senator Nienau the courtesy? He's got folks
Absolutely.
From outside of the Capitol. I think I just called you an insider, Commissioner.
Absolutely.
Here to testify. So, Senator Nienau, is Senator Nienau here? He's not here.
He's probably watching on TV.
That's right.
There he is.
Here he is. Senator Nenow, welcome to the Tax Committee.
It's quick.
We have Senate File 109.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 109 is a relatively simple bill. What it would do is allow the city of Taylor's Falls to be included in the Border City Development Zone, currently in statute. There's a capitation on the if Taylor's Falls would be included. There's a capitation of a total of $100,000 for incentives for the city of Taylor's Falls. The situation with Taylor's Falls is that they are a border city, literally from the right place in the city, a stone's throw from Wisconsin, St. Croix Falls. And St. Croix Falls has grown significantly larger than Taylor's Falls, mostly because of the appeal of being across the border in the environment there in Wisconsin. Not the physical environment, but the tax and regulatory environment. Madam Chair, if I would, I'd just like to let the mayor and the Chisago County, Chris Eng from Chisago County, speak to this from their perspective.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. Some of you might recognize me. I've been here several times before. I'm still Mayor Mike, as the residents call me, and I'm now in my fifth term as the mayor of Taylor's Falls. And for those of you who are not familiar with our city, Taylor's Falls has a population of 1,031 people. And the challenge that we have, and what I've been here and asking for, is inclusion to an existing program, that Border Cities Development Zone. And it must be working because it still works in western Minnesota. And so I'd like to see it expanded to include Taylor's Falls on the eastern side. Now, what I've been doing for the last 3 years, besides coming down here and asking to be included, is I've actually been building partnerships. The first partnership that we actually built, was with MnDOT. And what we had was a situation where MnDOT owns an entire city block in our downtown, and our city's only four blocks long. And MnDOT had an old building, 50 years old. They needed to invest a lot of money in it. And so we sat down with them and said, well, how about if we work together as a partner? And we approached our county HRA EDA, and they provided the funding for us. And so what we did in our city is we built onto our existing public works building. We built on a salt sand storage facility. And MnDOT, in the last month, has actually moved into that new facility with their loader and their plow truck. Now the city of Taylor's Falls actually owns that one block, 2 acres, right at the northern end of our city. The land is now for sale. We've never received revenue from that property because it was owned by MnDOT. Once the property sells and it's developed, we'll pay back our HRA EDA board in full. And with the building there, we'll have something we've never had before, brand new revenue. And it's something that I've been chasing for the last 3 years. I've been telling the residents, it's not about just cuts. It's about finding new revenue also. So with a new building there, I'll have new revenue. You'll have new revenue. Mm-hmm. Now, the next partnership that I'm actually in the process of establishing, and I apologize if I say I every now and then. I always mean we, but I become very passionate as the mayor of our city, trying to do the right thing for our city, just like you do for all of your residents. But with working with Xcel Energy, they needed to build a substation. And so the second partnership. Xcel Energy identified 32 acres of property, and they said, we need about 10 acres of that land to build a new substation. And so we told them to buy all 32 acres because we said, we'll work with you in a partnership to actually buy the remaining property. And what I want to do with that property is build a business park and also have land for a future sewer pond in the event that our city needs a sewer pond in the future. Well, Xcel Energy built their substation. They sold us the remaining property. And the way we're paying for it is using tax abatement dollars from the revenue produced from that Xcel Energy substation. So as we pay them for the property, it now puts us in a rare position. We actually own property for the first time that we've ever had. And now with that property, we're also partnering with the HRA EDA again to put in the infrastructure. Now, I'm in a rare position. We actually have land we're paying for with tax abatement dollars. We're putting in the infrastructure with the Xcel Energy tax abatement dollars with our portion of it and also the HRA EDA. So now I'm in a rare position where I have land that I can give away. And so I'm going to be marketing free land to businesses to come and locate in Taylor's Falls. Now, I do have a challenge, and that's actually where your role comes in. I need another partner. It's the state of Minnesota, because I've got a difficult challenge before me with the state of Wisconsin. If you take a look at the handout that we've provided you with, there's a picture of a concept plan for our future business park. And if you said, do you own the land? The answer is, yes, I do. If you said, is the infrastructure in? I'd say, this summer, I'm planning to build a business park. But the challenge that I've got is if you turn to the very next page, there's a picture of the state of Wisconsin, the picture of the two cities, Taylor's Falls and St. Croix Falls, and you can see that we're just separated by a river. So you can see at the very bottom of the picture there, there's U.S. Highway 8. That's the bridge that connects the two cities. It used to be a toll bridge many years ago. You know, I've considered that. That's not going to fly. The real challenge that I have is if you turn to the very next page, it shows a picture of the Welcome to Wisconsin sign. And the newest addition, which happened in the month of January, is at the very bottom. It says, open for business. So that was just newly added. Now, I've been hoping for, you know, one of three things. Either it snows more to cover the sign, or that the plants grow together to cover up the shrubs, or that you'll help me compete with the state of Wisconsin. If you look at the next picture, it shows our sign. That's a fairly recent addition, probably in the last 10 years. It's a beautiful sign. I think it's nicer looking than Wisconsin, but it just says Minnesota welcomes you. So what are we doing about the competition in Wisconsin? That last picture that I've given you shows a picture of our sign that we have up. Now, the verbiage at the bottom that says a city ready for business, that's not there. Because if I put it there, it's not true. I have to build my business park. I have to have the land ready to give away, and I need that partnership with the state of Minnesota. So right now, if you look at this property for the business park, and you'd say, how much revenue are you receiving? The answer is, we're not receiving anything because we own the property. If you said, how much is the state receiving in revenue? The answer is, you're not receiving any money from this property because it's not paying any taxes right now. What I need you to help me do is compete with the state of Wisconsin to be able to bring businesses, attract them to this location. Businesses means revenue, jobs, all good things for our city. I hope good things for the state of Minnesota. And so, I need that partnership. When I was first elected, I came in and I inherited a tax rate of 102. The tax rate right now is 80.7. So in the last 8 years, I brought the tax rate down a little over 20%. Now, I've been asked the question, number one, do you have a financial gain in this personally? And the answer is I have absolutely no financial gain in this project whatsoever. My financial gain comes from being paid the $1,800 a year that they pay me to be their mayor. It's not a whole lot of money, but that's what they pay me. If you said, okay, what about your concern about attracting businesses from other local cities? I plan on marketing to the businesses in the state of Wisconsin. Any businesses that may be leaving Minnesota to go to Wisconsin, hopefully I can capture them and keep them in Minnesota with this program. If you look at my neighboring cities, the city of North Branch, their tax rate is 47.4. If you look at another neighboring city, Lindstrom, their tax rate is 44.7. If you look at another neighboring city, Center City, their tax rate is 27. And again, mine is 80.7. So I don't think I have much of a concern about attracting businesses from my local cities. It's Wisconsin that I'm going after. Now, I actually took some verbiage from the existing statute. It's statute.
Mr. Mayor, excuse me. Can I just ask our counsel to just explain to the committee what that status would provide you if we were to support you as a border city development zone? Our council just explained what kinds of benefits you're looking for.
Are you talking from a tax advantage standpoint?
Right. Ms. Zoff will advise the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, and if I can pass the microphone to Chris Ng. He's the HRA EDA director. His role is to actually explain how we participate in the program.
Right. For now, we'll take some advice from our council, and then we'll get back to your EDA. That's all right. Thank you. Ms. Zoff.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the effect of passing this bill would be to allow the city of Taylor's Falls to designate all or a part of the city as a border city development zone. And this bill would piggyback onto the type of incentives that are available currently to cities on the western border of North Dakota. And essentially, the $100,000 is a pot of money that could be used by the city to either reimburse it and the county for the cost of property tax exemptions that it would give to a new business in the town or in the zone, or it could also be used for certain sales tax exemptions for purchases of construction materials or equipment, or it's also available to be used as a corporate franchise tax credit for a portion of the wages that are paid by a new business.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe Council can answer this. I thought I remembered we actually appropriated money for the border city development zones. Isn't that? And I'm wondering why this is drafted differently than how the border city language is.
Well, Ms. Zah?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, this is actually somewhat similar. What we did when you appropriated the money for those western border cities was to appropriate every 2 years or so, you would appropriate a pot of money that would be distributed, made available among those cities on a per capita basis so they could use that money as a reimbursement or a payback of the credits. So it is similar to that approach.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Ms. Soft, can you explain, Ms. Soft, why the border city designation is just for Breckenridge, Dilworth, East Grand Forks, Moorhead, and Ortonville, when there is four sides to the state?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen.
Five sides? It depends on how you count that. Ms. Soft.
My recollection is that this particular statute was advocated for by cities that were on that border, and many of these, most of these tax incentives at the time, I believe, were tailored to mimic tax credits or tax preferences that were made available by the state of North Dakota. So it was to help the cities on the North Dakota border compete with the North Dakota tax incentives.
And, Madam Chair?
Senator Rosen.
Ms. Soft, has any studies been done to look at the comparison of from South Dakota, Iowa, and then, of course, Wisconsin?
Ms. Soft, if you know.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm not aware of that. We can check and find out.
Interesting. Thank you. I would appreciate it.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, you know, when we get into identifying certain cities, you know, of course, comes to mind Red Wing, Lake City, Wabasha, Winona. You know, I'm just maybe there could be a friendly amendment added to this. Maybe the author would care to add a couple of cities to this. I wasn't aware of this border city development, but now that I am, you know, I'm sure this is, people are going to say, well, you're sitting on a tax committee, and, you know, how are you helping us out here in Senate 28? So, you know, I'm just wondering if, you know, picking individual cities, you know, I'm just talking out loud here, if we have an issue with our borders, you know, what we're talking about, would it make sense to allocate? But there is a cost to this program, and would it, you know, make sense to do that with, you know, maybe cities that have port authorities be exempt from it? But, you know, I think there's maybe a broader discussion that needs to be happening, because I certainly can see other cities saying, well, wait a minute now, it's coming from the western side over to the eastern side, and everybody's going to want their fair share. So just some thoughts there. And you know, I wasn't aware that this program was there until.
Well, and Senator Nina, we are willing to have that bigger conversation for sure. Senator Nina.
Madam Chair, I'm sure the members have seen it, but I failed to mention the fiscal note is in there. If you haven't seen it, for the next biennium, there's an $11,000 cost. The assumption of the fiscal note is that the amount would be prorated over a 9-year period.
Senator Hoffman and Senator Limmer, and just very quickly, if I could interrupt, Senator Reiner, I don't think we're going to get to your bill today, and I understand you've been gracious enough to take that bill up another day if we can. Thank you for that. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just to any of the testifiers, I like the reasons that you're bringing this forward, that we know we have to be more competitive in the state. My district is actually closed to the North Dakota border, and even 60 miles from the border, these guys are wanting border status because they are. We have an interstate highway that runs through my biggest town, and it's real close to Fargo. And speaking as somebody who actually owns a business in North Dakota, there is a reason why it's located in Fargo, and it's not just the border city status that helps businesses. It's a statewide status, and so I personally would like to see us develop a statewide economic plan that wouldn't just pick winners and losers. users, but would instead benefit the whole state and really truly compete with North Dakota, South Dakota, and now Wisconsin that has the signs up. So I appreciate why you brought the bill. I would like to see us widen this to the whole state and make a really great solid plan that would, you know, rival everybody in the United States.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. I'm following up on Senator Howe's discussion. I thought maybe to treat all the border cities the same way, we could just make a definition on this that from a border we go inland about 200 miles to go all the way around the state.
And, I think three would get the job done.
And then the a border community like Maple Grove could take advantage of it. And it would be a little disadvantage for maybe Sartell. But other than that, 99% of the state would be covered.
Senator Nienau, or Mayor, is it?
Madam Chair, it's actually pronounced Buchheit.
Buchheit.
If you look at it and pronounce it correctly from the spelling, it usually makes me a little nervous.
Buchheit. And Mr. Eng, any final comments on this bill from any of you? We've had a pretty good discussion here. The Chair would recommend that we lay this bill over for possible inclusion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The bill is moved. Thank you. Members, we do have a hearing tomorrow. We have testimony on the governor's budget, both pro and con. Should be an interesting day in the tax committee tomorrow. We are adjourned.